Blog Talk Radio.
I want to welcome everyone to John Talk Radio, Independent Music Showcase. I'm your host, John Darlington. This is September the 9th, 2020. My special guest tonight is Rick Romanka, and we're going to be playing and talking about his new release, Better Days. We just heard the title track from that album, and it will be released on September the 22nd. So this is pretty cool that we're playing it. Rick, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks so much for having me, John.
Oh, it's great to have you on. We were talking a little bit before the show. I mean, we've done this several times now. I can't remember how many, but it's really good to talk to you. I really appreciate you being on. I think I'm going to go ahead and say it. I think this is your best work. I think this album is incredible.
Wow. I really appreciate that. Thanks so much. I'm very proud of it, as you know, but I think a lot of it has to do with all the brilliant musical friends that were guest stars on this thing. I think they really brought all their styles together to help make these songs that are really, you know, important to me even better than they would have been. So I have them to thank.
Yeah, you know, it'd be a good time to talk about that. I mean, the collaboration that you have on this album is incredible. If you'd like to give a nod to a few of them now, Rick. And also, when you do that, did you have in mind, okay, I've got this song and I'd like this person to play with me on this? Or was it like, how did that work? Because I think it can work a few ways. How did that fit into, okay, so this is my album. I want this to sound like me, but I want my buddies and my friends and these talented people to be on it. How'd you go by that process?
Well, in 2014, I released my first solo album, and I played all instruments myself, including drums, because I wanted to, I don't know, prove to myself, I guess, that I could do it, because I've always been a fan of do-it-yourself type producers / musician, singer-songwriters, Paul McCartney, Prince, Emma Rhodes, so many great artists out there. So I did that exercise, and then I was writing a whole bunch of material, some for my band Maple Mars. We're also working on a new album, which should be out sometime next year. And then I had a bunch of these other songs that weren't very much in the style of Maple Mars. I would write one, and then either it would go to Maple Mars, or I considered it to be a solo song. So originally I thought, well, maybe it'd be a nice idea to do this 180 degrees the other way, where I actually had a lot of collaborations. And, you know, living in Los Angeles for as long as I have now, I've developed a pretty good relationship with so many, you know, musician friends out here from playing so many shows. And some of them are just uber talented. I've wanted to be in bands with them or just do something musically with them. So I thought, well, maybe have a few of them play on some of the tracks. And then, of course, it snowballed. It just, as soon as I got a taste of what it would be like to have, you know, to do it this way, it was very an addictive process. I wanted more and more, you know, and it just sort of snowballed. It was a really fun experiment. And one of the liner notes I put on the album was, you know, every time I got a track from one of these guys, it was, or women, it would be like Christmas, you know. Listen, here comes the new bass line for song number, you know, 7. And I was always awestruck by a lot of the influences and talent that everybody brought to the team.
Did you write around that, or did they fit into songs that you'd already written?
No. I had already had probably half of the record written, if not three quarters of it, by the time I decided to start, you know, recording these tunes. I made a bunch of demos, and then I just started passing the demos around to some friends and just said, hey, you know, I think I'm going to do a solo album. Would you be interested in playing on this? And usually they really like the tune. Well, actually, in most cases, I didn't have really anybody say no. A couple people were really busy, and I had to wait some time for them to get around it. But, I'm infringing upon their time, so I was more than happy to wait for me. And it was always worth the wait.
Yeah. Sure. Could you name a few of the people?
Yeah. Eric Skotis played drums on several tracks. Jeff Sullivan, who was a drummer in Driving and Crying, played on three tracks. Drummers. My brother Michael, he was in a band called Illface out of Connecticut. He played on the track. I had Ronnie Barnett playing bass from the Muffs. Teresa Cowles, Carrie Caccione, all bass players, Michael Simmons, guitar players. I had uber talented people, Dean Falcone, Ron Bonfiglio, more guitar players, Scott Robbins, Wally Farkas also did some background vocals. And I feel like I'm name dropping, but these guys deserve credit. Chris Price did some great keyboard work and background vocals on The Ever After, and Dan Rothschild played bass on a couple tracks, as did Mike Randall from Arthur Lee and Love Revisited and Baby Lemonade. I knew this was gonna. I should have had a list. Yeah, I read off the list, but there's about 30 of them. And I even had my kids, my two little kids, sang on that track that you just played. They sing at the end.
Oh, that's great.
In a little kid choir.
That's really cool. You know what's interesting, Rick, is just recently I write an article for a local newspaper, and it's a music article, and I did it on Steely Dan's album Asia. And I think it's a remarkable album. But what's kind of interesting to compare that with what you were doing was they had used bands before. There were guys that they had used, and they decided that there wasn't any way that they could translate what was in their head to the recording with these guys. Not that they didn't like them, but they were in Los Angeles like you are, and there were all these studio musicians available, and all these guys that were just, I think, like Wayne Shorter and Larry Carlton and all these dudes that were just hanging around. And they used, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think they used over 40 studio musicians for that album. Like you were saying, you'd have a bass player for this song, a bass player for that song, a drummer for this, and they would do the same thing. And they knew what they had. I mean, was that kind of how you did it, Rick, where you would have the song in your head and you knew what you wanted it to sound like? And although you kind of did the McCartney thing on the first album, which I think is awesome, I really enjoy that. But I also think that, you know, was that part of it, like what Fagan and Becker did? They thought, man, we're going to get the best musicians out here to do what I want to do, to make it sound like I think it at its best can sound. Does that make sense?
Not really, because to be honest with you, not really, because I didn't know. I just, after the first couple tracks, I was like, oh, this is really sounding cool. I'm going to keep going. Better Days was one of the first tracks I recorded, and The Ever After, and I think State of Mind was another one I did really, really early. And so those tracks came together so well that I just wanted to keep going. And it wasn't about getting the best people I could. I mean, I wasn't hiring all these were just friends that I just asked to play. And you know, it was a friend or somebody that I felt I had known pretty well and just admired. They were all friends that were musicians that I admired. A couple more names: Karen Bassett, Joe Giddings, Joel Valder on drums, Proben Gregory did some horns, and Jason Burke, another name, and Robbie Ritz played some drums as well. I don't want to forget anybody. I keep like, because I'm going from memory, but I think I got everybody.
No.
So.
Yeah, that's just incredible. So when you were listening I'm just going to say to the average music fan, they would hear a song, and things that would kind of sound the same would be maybe a drummer, maybe a bass player, laying the bottom, laying the rhythm out, the rhythm section, and a lot of people can't tell the difference. But a musician can tell the difference, and a drummer can really tell the difference, and a bass player can really tell the difference. You play all these instruments, so you can listen to these songs and you can see the drummers. You can tell which drummer is which. I mean, is that did that enhance your songs? Because I've listened to some drummers that, well, my gosh, they have definitely changed the whole band. I mean, I listened to this one band that I thought was pretty good, but they had a terrible drummer, and it made the band drag. And they got this guy that could play, and they just went from like 2 to 8. And I thought,
yeah.
So how do you feel when you, like it sounded like you had 2 or 3 different drummers, maybe?
No, I think I had 4. I think 5 total.
Oh.
Yeah.
So each one had their own style, right?
Yeah, so basically in the demos, I would you know, just throw in some sample drums in there that had the basic beat. But my whole thing was like, you know, obviously, you know, it's a 4/4 time signature. That's all you have to consider. Just play. I would have them play against the demo and just play what you feel. Play what you think would sound great. And so, as I said, everybody rose to the occasion. And like I said, everyone that I asked was a really talented musician. So I really had no fear that, you know, I was going to get a track back that wasn't any good, because all these people have been proven and have done great, great work. So I wasn't worried in the least. I was always, you know, really excited to work with them. Some of the drummers I went into the studio with, most of them I did, drum-wise, I went into the studio. But there were a couple, like my brother did his track in Connecticut. He recorded in the studio in Connecticut and just sent me the track. Robbie Riss recorded at his own home and sent me the track. Joel Valder played on 2 songs, one he did with me in the studio, and then one he did at home, one track, one tune he did at home. And they were both equally great sounding. So, it's, you know, when you work with people that have been doing this for a long time and are just talented, I mean, there's always a spontaneity behind it. That's the other thing, is that, you know, there's, you know, no rules. So with everybody, I would just say, play whatever you feel, you know, you'd listen to the demo. I would do little guitar lines. I would play bass and everything, but at the end of the day, don't copy what I did. You know, put your own style in there, and that's what a lot of folks did. And it was always, you know, great for me. I was like, oh wow, I would have never thought to do that. You know.
Yeah.
So it was really.
That's really cool. Yeah, I like that part. And my brain is kind of stuck in this Steely Dan thing, and I really apologize for that. But I did a lot of work on trying to get this article together, and they did something like you were saying, man, they were like totally different. It was like, we're going to push all these guys that are the top notch studio musicians and push them to perfection.
Right.
And then what really blew my mind, Rick, was that once they got there, they said, now show your personality. Now do your thing, but not below perfection, above it. And
right,
I thought,
right.
That would probably make more sense to you than it would to me, because I'm not a musician. I don't know what it's like to sit down in the studio and mix things together. But I thought a couple of them, when they were told by the guys to do something, you know, they would like nod yes, and then they would do what they thought was cool. You know, like you said, bringing their 2 cents in.
Well, then you get somebody like Fernando Perdomo, who was another guy that I left out, but now I'm remembering. He played on it as well, along with Bill Cutton on Robot Lover, and he did this crazy guitar part on that song. I mean, all the stuff that he did was truly amazing. But he did one ending for this song that was just out of left field. It was so bizarre, and maybe I'll release that at some point, a version of the song with his ending. It was crazy, but I love where he was coming from, where it was like he was thinking outside the box, and he was just That's what it's all about. It's about, you know, trying things. So he gave me, you know, okay, here's the safer version and here's a crazy version.
He's a cool guy.
He is, and he's very talented. And you know, that's what it's all about. It's all about, you know, the creative process and trying to make it work. And my whole thing as the songwriter producer is to try to harness all the stuff and make it sort of sound like one cohesive piece. That being said, I think a lot of the songs sound pretty different on the album. The album is definitely not a samey sounding album. And a lot of that again has to do with you know, the various styles that people bring to the picture.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that. I think, you know, I'm sitting here trying to absorb that because I'm with you on the creative. Let people bring that to the table and go places where you may not have gone, you know, that you may not have even thought of, and you bring these other people in and they can like go, like you were talking about Fernando and different people that have, you know, they're looking at it differently. They're hearing it differently. I think that's tremendous. I always like that. And anything, whether it's, you know, at work or in music or in sports or anything. But I think that's where I would have gone. But then after getting my brain drenched with Donald Fagen and Walter Becker, and it's like, God, I think I need therapy after that. Because go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I totally love Steely Dan. I'm a fan, but they set out to get the best people they can and to make it a very pro sounding record. You know, in my case, you know, I wanted people that were talented, but at the same time, I sort of needed to have some sort of connection with that person first.
Yeah.
You know,
I get that. Yeah.
You know, even if it was that of an admirer, but like I said, anybody I asked to be on the album, it's not like I didn't know them. I mean, either we were good friends or we were good acquaintances, and we admired each other's work. So, in the case like when I was recording at the studio Tomorrowland over in Eagle Rock, Debbie Sher was engineering, and you know, she had mentioned, you know, some harmonies on one song, and she was talking about some parts, and finally I just said, why don't you play on it? So she ended up playing some keyboard on one track. And then, you know, another time I have a friend who could sing, you know, it was just a mutual friend, and she had been in a few bands but hadn't been in a band in quite a while, and just had her swing by and come sing, and I was pleasantly surprised what she did on The Ever After. Her name is Kim Tellez Coughlin. And again, super surprised and blown away by some of the people and what they brought to the project. Annie Chelsea is another one. She sang on The Last Volcano. Annie Chelsea has put out a really good volume of work and is a great singer-songwriter. And I've admired her for years, so it was cool getting her on as well. And, you know, that's part of the magic of it is – all these people that are also songwriters and also producers and also, I mean, they get it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I think that's cool. And let's get people away so they can, is the album still in pre-order or can they order the album? I mean, it's released the 22nd, which is what, a couple of weeks from now. So what's a good place for them to get that?
They can go to sodastarmusic.com. It's all one word, Sodastar Music, and like Soda Pop, sodastarmusic.com. And there's all instructions on how to pre-order. And on the 22nd, I should have – so I'm doing vinyl and digital. It's looking like there may be CDs as well. I should know by the end of this month. But right now it's just vinyl and digital, and the vinyl I'm praying will be there by the 22nd. I have a test copy coming out to me, early next week. And if all sounds good, I should have the whole batch before the 22nd, which would be great.
Rick Romanka is my guest tonight, and we're listening to his album, parts of it, Better Days. We started off the show with that. That's such a great song. And so we've talked about a few songs here. Let's play, you've mentioned a couple. Let's play State of Mind. And would you like to talk about that, Rick, before we play it?
Yeah, that one, again, like a lot of these songs came together really quick. I was, you know, with songwriting, it's like you got to strike while the iron's hot. And I was going through this writing frenzy, actually. I was just writing a bunch of songs, and this is another one that fell into that category. I wrote probably 3 months, 2 months after I tracked it. It's just about trying to keep your head when everything is going awry. just realizing that, you know, we can look at the world as an incredibly crazy place and live in fear and uncertainty, or we can just go with the flow and just, just realize that, hey, I'm still living, I'm still breathing, and it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And that was actually before 2020. So,
and now it's, you know, it's really, yeah. Now we're playing it in 2020, and it's, we'll talk about that when we come back after this song. We'll talk to Rick Romatka about how this year has affected him creatively and musically. And let's play this. This is State of Mind from Rick Romatka's latest release, Better Days, and we'll be right back with Rick after this.
Moving sideways, over and under, high jumping mountains, tuning out thunder. Much thicker skin.
And we're back on John Talk Radio's Independent Music Showcase with Rick Romatka, and we're talking about his latest release, Better Days. We just heard State of Mind. Rick, who plays lead on that track?
Yeah, that's Ron Bonfiglio playing those amazing guitar licks on that tune. He did a great job, and all those backgrounds are Rob just doing all these great layered backgrounds. And that was another one. I got his tracks. So I was like, oh my God, this stuff's amazing. And Derek Anderson, very good friend of mine, plays bass on that track as well. Derek plays with the Bangles and his own band, the Andersons, that my old band, Double Knot Spies, used to play with, and the Visionaries. And Derek played with the Smithereens, and he's probably one of the nicest guys in the LA music scene by far. And that was Jeff Sullivan on drums.
Yeah, that's an amazing track. So let's talk about how, you know, I know you talked about the songwriting and how that you got in this kind of this feeding frenzy and it's just happened and you started writing all these different songs. And that's really cool how that works like that with different musicians. I just think that's amazing. So when you started thinking, okay, I'm going to put together this solo album, did you have songs? Were the songs written prior to 2020, and did you write any during that? And if you did they, was that, I mean, I'm trying to make this so that it makes sense, because we're going through a weird time. We're going through a very, you know, never happened before like this. And it's stretches people's nerves, and a lot of things are going on. And I just wondered if that affected your songwriting any, and if going through this time.
What do you mean we're going through a weird time? You mean, I mean, outside of, you know, the political turmoil, the medical turmoil, and the social turmoil, it's a great year.
I tell you what, it's one of those things where I just stopped watching the news. I couldn't do it anymore. I just said, that's it. If something really bad's happening, Rick, I'm pretty sure my wife would call me and tell me about it. Hey, John, you need to do this.
So the only thing, so my little neighbor next door said the only turmoil we haven't gone through yet really is environmental. And it's like, oh, well, here come the fires already. And there's a fire.
Thanks, neighbor, for saying that. Yeah,
exactly. Well, this girl, she's brilliant. She's 12 years old. I think they put the fire out, which is good, but I was a little nervous because I had helicopters going over my house an hour and a half ago. You know, it's like, okay, well, I may have to do this interview from a car, but it's all good. And anyway, to answer your question, no, I wrote all these songs prior to this crazy year. It was it took about a year and a half to record this album. So I started in late 2018. You know, I was going through a lot of stuff. I've been going through a very, very long divorce. So a lot of soul searching, a lot of, I don't know. When I get in these, sometimes I get in these funks, and the only thing that helped me get out of the funks are, you know, writing songs. So I try to use it in a cathartic way. You know, it's better than therapy, you know. That's pretty much how they came together. And then, you know, I also feel like once you strike that match and the fire is burning, you should just, you know, take advantage of that situation while the cinders are going. Go ahead and start writing and write another one, as long as you can, you know, be inspired.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's got to be where you're feeling that creative when you know you're tapped into it and you know it's working. And I agree with you. Sometimes it's the weirdest things. You may feel like crap, and you think, I just don't feel like thinking about anything. And then all of a sudden, things start moving, you know, in your spirit, and then you start thinking about things. And then you talked about better than therapy. I am 100% with you on that, because whether it's art, whether you're drawing, whether you're painting, whether you're singing, whether you're playing the instruments, then you start creating. And I think that lifts you above that. It lifts, takes you, it's kind of like what you were talking about in State of Mind. It takes you out of that.
Yeah.
You're not just staring at your problems. Yeah.
Yeah. exercise and art are the two best replacements, I think, for therapy, because they're both dopamine rushes, you know. And you create something that you're really proud of, it's beyond a dopamine rush. It's something that you can live with. And as I said, you know when it's happening. I mean, I get that feeling. I get those little, you get tingles when you know you're onto something. I mean, I know if it's crap right away. But sometimes you spend a lot of time on something and you think it's good, and then you realize, well, this is crap, and I've been chasing my tail. But usually you get a certain excitement, and you know you're onto something good because the excitement is genuine.
Yeah, that's a great point. Do you have someone, Rick, that you bounce them off of, like you're writing a song, or do you just internalize it and think, you know, if I'm okay with it, I'm going to just keep going with it? Because that can be a touchy thing when like I might like something I'm doing and I share it with somebody and they may not get it. And they might think, well, it's not your best or whatever. But I have a hard time with that.
I usually trust my own intuition. Sometimes I bounce things off my little kids.
They're honest. Funny. They'll tell you.
Yeah, they are. And I actually have, I used to play to them all the time when they were a little younger. Before bed, I would play all these songs from the 60s and 70s to them. So they had a good foundation. And so they know that you know, daddy's music sounds sort of like the 60s and the 70s. And so, you know, every now and then I would just throw one of my own in there and they'd be like, oh, I like that song. I'm like, oh, really?
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah. So, I mean, but for the most part, I don't know. I just use my gut feeling. Usually if I send, you know, it'd get to the demo point, I'd make a demo of the song and then I would send it to somebody, and they were usually pretty, pretty enthusiastic about working on the tune because they liked it, and that's all I wanted.
Yeah.
It's just, I wouldn't want anybody to work on something they didn't like, and you know, it wasn't like I was asking somebody that does classical music or jazz or whatever. I mean, I was obviously asking people that were into the same kind of music I'm into, so.
Right.
That helps.
So is there a song on this collection that you're pretty proud of? You know, I think I've asked this question before with musicians, and sometimes they're thinking, well, you know, I like a mother, I like my children. They all have different this and that, and they're all different. So I don't know. But is there one of the songs, Rick, that you think, man, I'm really proud of this particular one?
Well, I'll give you the stock answer and say I am proud of all of them. I mean, you know, they were all, they were all little achievements, you know, little victories, I feel like. Those were the ones that made it through the cut of all the little song sketches that I had. I mean, I do a lot of little, you know, I use my iPhone. I'll play into my iPhone. I get an idea. I'll pick up the guitar and I'll turn on, you know, notes and record. You know, little passages. And I have a ton of those little sketches. And then I'll go back sometimes and listen to them. And sometimes one will jump out. I'm like, oh, wow. I didn't think this was that good on the day that I came up with the idea. But then I'll go back and listen. And a lot of times I'll combine a lot of those little notes into one song. I mean, it's a whole process. But I feel like if it got all the way through to the album, you know, there must be something special about it. And then of course you bring in all the other players and it makes it really special. But I would have to say, I think The Ever After is one of my favorites. I like to hear I'm Here to Entertain as well. That's the circus, the one about the sad alcoholic clown. And we shot a really cool video for that one. I really
that's
like
awesome
that one
video. Very good.
Thanks. And my friend Mark Helfrich directed that. He works in the business and he's a pro, and I was very, very lucky and eternally grateful for him working on this thing because he did such a cool job. But The Ever After, I think, is a little bit more somber turn. I mean, it's basically about life after divorce. So, you know, it's personal. I mean, a lot of these songs are personal to me.
Yeah.
But that one, I feel like I really captured what I was trying to say and the vibe, and again, all the people that played on it just helped bring it together. Chris Price did some amazing background vocals and keyboards, and Dean Falcone, some really moody guitar that just totally fit the song. And it wasn't even what I was expecting him to play. I mean, he just came up with something totally different than what I was expecting, and I loved it, you know. And
that's great.
Just made the track. Yeah.
Let's play it. This is Rick Romatka.
Okay.
This is the Ever After. We'll be back to finish up the interview with Rick. This is so much fun talking to you, man. I really appreciate it. And let's go ahead and play it. This is the Ever After from Rick's latest release, Better Days, and we'll be right back.
Dragon, I don't mind.
I want to welcome everyone back to John Talk Radio's Independent Music Showcase. I'm your host, John Darlington. My special guest tonight is Rick Remodka. You can pre-order his album, Better Days, on sodastarmusic.com, and it will be in vinyl and digital. And I'm going to order vinyl, Rick, because I'm a vinyl freak, and I interviewed someone not too long ago with this really incredible band from the 70s called The Trees, and it was one of the coolest things ever to get to talk to these guys. And I was telling them I was in a sea of vinyl, and I was talking about my office where I have just records everywhere, and I think they weren't really sure what I was talking about. See a final. What is wrong with this guy? But I will definitely. I love the album. I want to get it on vinyl. It'd just be great. So join me, listeners, and purchase "Better Days" from Rick Remodka. It's a really an amazing work. Just great, and I really love it. And we got just a couple minutes left. So. I was just wondering about, you and I have talked before about gear and what instruments, what guitars are you playing right now? And I always love to talk gear talk with people and amplification and how you get your sounds and what's going on there in that realm.
Well, I got to be honest with you. I'm not a big gearhead. I have a few guitars. And some pedals and some recording gear, and it's all fairly basic. I mean, I have an old Fender Tornado. When I say old, it's 1997 Fender Tornado that looks like a Jazzmaster. Recorded a lot of records with that. And I have a Gibson SG, and I have a Gibson Firebird, which is a really cool. Guitar, but it's really big. It's like playing a piano. And I have a nice piano in my living room, which is cool. I have a baby grand that I pound on and write with, and that's it. I got a little Fender Jazz Precision bass, some decent foot pedals. And I'm always just for cool sounds. So. I'll experiment with different filter pedals and things like that. But as soon as I get one, I get rid of it and get another one because I'm always bored with what I have. And I do a lot of experimenting with sounds for the most part because I also do sound for a living. You know, I'm a sound mixer and sound designer for feature films. So I just I'm trying to use my ears and not always depend so much on the gear. That being said, having good gear is a great thing. I mean, if you can afford it and you're lucky enough to find the cool stuff, then by all means, but it can be quite expensive.
Yeah. And if you get the sound you want, I mean, why go anywhere else? I mean, you hit some pretty nice. Yeah. You've got the SG's got its own sound. I just love it. And you know, the Fenders too. So it's like, I don't think you can get, you know, there's not a whole lot better you can do than
I used
that.
All records. I used all three of those guitars, and I also used my Breedlove acoustic. But as I said, a lot of it wasn't me. A lot of it was the players. I tried to use the players as much as I could. And then I would just fill in the blank. Sometimes I do a little guitar part that I felt was on the demo, and I would fall in love with it, and I would want to add that part or have it in the background at least as a foundation. And that's it. Recording wise, I don't have a really fancy studio. Just some really good mic pre's, and I'm mainly running everything through the Pro Tools or Logic. And that's it. I have good plugins.
Well, so, it sounds great.
There's a million ways. There's one ways to record these days. So it's really how crazy you want to get with the analog stuff, or if you're going to have a hybrid studio, which is what most people have.
Now, I know you've done some Facebook Live stuff, Rick. How's that How do you like doing that?
Actually, you're wrong about that. I have done zero Facebook Live stuff because I'm petrified to do Facebook Live stuff. Because not that I'm not going to play well. I'm just petrified that I'm going to start playing live and two people will tune in. You know, it's weird. It's like when you, it's the same pressure as when you plan a gig. You want people to come to your gig. And if there's nobody in the audience, you know, sometimes you don't have such a great time and you still have to put on a good show, but there's two people in the audience. So you're playing for two people and you're trying to, obviously I speak from experience, but then you have those shows where there's a ton of people and it comes off great because you're feeding off that crowd. Well,
right.
The thing about playing live on Facebook is almost the same thing. You just, you know, you want people tuning in. So I do these little treehouse sessions where I just record them. And I feel
right.
like now with social media and also with the pandemic and people watching movies and binge watching shows whenever they want, everyone wants to do something on their own schedule. So it's like, you know, to have an event where everyone has to tune in at one time, it's really hard because people are busy, you know, and,
right.
and you know, what's the magic hour? When's the best time? There really isn't one per se. So I think it's better to just put content out there and people will get to it when they get to it.
Yeah. And that's what I was looking at was your treehouse stuff. So do you like doing that?
Well, yeah, because I mean, first of all, with the pandemic, I just obviously wasn't going to be playing any shows. And then I started with one. And then, like, again, it just snowballed into a thing. And I had enough people say, keep doing these. So I just kept doing them. And, you know, put some lights up in the treehouse finally. And it doesn't sound particularly great in there, but it's a thing that I'm sort of comfortable doing, and I've had a few guests come by and do some songs with me too, and it's cool because what I do with that is I'll just do like three or four takes and I'll just pick the best one and then I just I air that, and that to me is better, and then people can watch it whenever they want. You know, it's not like I'm doing a live thing and I got to be on it. Maybe I'll do one at some point, but it's just easier. And then with my schedule and everything with the kids, it's just easier to just go out and hear the song three, four times, you know, and then post it the next day and done.
Yeah. You know, I think, yeah. And I enjoy from my perspective, you know, watching yours and watching all the other musicians doing this because, man, it's just been weird. I know it's got to be weird in Los Angeles because there's so many live shows all the time. And now with everything changing, and how do you think this has affected? I know it's affected the musicians because they can't make a living, a lot of them, doing their shows and stuff like this. Do you think it'll have a long-term effect on how maybe the future looks for musicians?
Yeah, I think we're going to have a lot more people doing live things on air. But once the pandemic passes, we're going to have live shows again. They'll probably be a lot safer about it. I don't know if we're going to have the big crowds on top of one another anymore. Maybe we will. Maybe we'll have a great vaccine that will enable us to do that. But some of this will be, I think, left over. I think we're still going to have the option to watch some things online. And the musicians that are doing this stuff, I think it's great. I try to tune in as much as I can when I have time, and I watch all my friends doing this stuff because I want to be supportive and
right.
I'm a fan. I feel for a lot of my musician friends that are making a living solely with music. This is a really tough time for them, and there are some. I don't want to say charities, but there are some relief programs for some of these people. But, you know, it's got to be really tough because I've always had a foot in that lifestyle as well. But I've been lucky that I, you know, I look at music as a privilege. You know, for me, it's my art and it's my thing I do. And I'm not worried about trying to make a living from it. I don't care if anybody buys the music. I mean, I want them to, but I don't have to depend on it. which I'm really happy about because it alleviates the pressure of having to, make or break. And I feel like I can do better work, actually, because I could put my heart and soul into something and take my time and not be under any kind of, deadline or and just really do it for the love of it and not because I got to eat.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, it makes you feel for people that are like that. I have a lot of friends out there that are having a tough time. But Rick, thank you so much for being on, man. I really appreciate it. Your album's great. Is there anything you'd like to say in closing, or anything maybe I forgot to mention?
No, I just that, I hope the world gets better. I hope we have a good election in November, and we can get things back on track, and everybody gets healthy, and all my talented music friends can go back to making music and making a living with their music like they should be. That's my biggest hope, and everyone stays healthy.
I'm right there with you. Thank you so much, and for the listeners out there, Better Days is Rick Rymotka's latest release. You can pre-order it on sodastarmusic.com. And Rick, stay safe, man. Thank you so much. And we'll talk to you later.
Thank you so much for having me, John. I really appreciate it. I had a blast.
Me too. Thank you. And thanks for everybody that's listening and supporting independent musicians. And we'll talk to everyone later.